Welcome to another edition of the PapaCast. This is a special PapaCast. The PapaCast goes on the road. Robert Sorge of Mendham, New Jersey, celebrating his 50th birthday, and his wife, Michelle, decided to do something really cool and invite the PapaCast to Rob's 50th birthday party. So we did a little Q&A with Rob. But before we got to that, the PapaCast welcomed in a special guest. Rob's a big Giants fan. And who was on the line but a Super Bowl champion, Sean O'Hara.
Congratulations on 50. That's a milestone. You're halfway home.
Thanks a lot, Sean. I appreciate that. Big fan of you and the Giants. Been a big Giant fan for, 40 years now. Been following them in the Super Bowl wins and losses. What's your thought on when they'll be back to the Super Bowl again?
Well, I think it's definitely unfamiliar territory for the Giants, their fan base, the organization. Certainly this team, you know, having Coach Coughlin there for 12 years is a long time in the NFL. And you know, he was brought in to restore New York Giant pride, and I think he delivered on that. So this is a new era and new ground for the players there and for the team. And I think we're going to see a different Giants team, a different identity. You know, they're going to be a much more offensively oriented team. It's not going to be the same Giants football that most people are used to, but I think that's part of the way the NFL is headed. That's the way the offenses are trending, and I think that it's going to make for an exciting offense to watch. Certainly, you know, everybody's watching Ben McAdoo to see what kind of leadership style he brings to the team. You know, certainly Coach Coughlin was a very beloved coach from top to bottom with the players, so he's got big shoes to fill from there. But I think he's a young, smart, energetic coach, and I think the players really respect him.
We have quite a few Giant fans in the room, and Odell Beckham is looks like a Giant for the future and should take him to the promised land. But watching him this year, what's your thoughts on him and controlling himself in game-like situations?
You know, the Giants have had some really good receivers throughout the franchise's existence, but I don't think there's ever been a receiver and really a player that has been as explosive and yet as entertaining as Odell Beckham in such a short amount of time. And it's crazy to think that he's only going to be going into his third year. He's still such a young kid. And the way that he's able to take over a game and you know, to be frank, it was basically him and Eli. I mean, there really wasn't anybody else for the defense to focus on. And still, he found ways to take over the game. You know, he's doing things that no receiver has done in their first two seasons in NFL history. So, you know, when you start to compare a young guy like that with the likes of Jerry Rice and you start putting him in those conversations, it's exciting for everybody involved in the organization, but I also think that the way that Odell Beckham is, the way that he practices, the way that he prepares, the time that he puts in, and his mindset, I think, you know, everybody realizes that, man, he's still just scratching the surface.
Right.
Yeah, I know you had an Eli question, too, about Eli.
So, with respect to Eli, so McAdoo's really brought the best of him this past year. What's your thoughts on him from a longevity standpoint? How many more good years do you think he has left, and can he bring us one more ring?
Yeah, Eli's in his prime right now, and I think, you know, it's been it's a shame that the last couple of years that they haven't had enough pieces around him to really take advantage of these years for Eli, and certainly not having Victor Cruz this year kind of, you know, that disabled them offensively at times. But I think Eli, his best football is still ahead of him, and these next few years are going to be crucial. I think it's great for him, you know, just knowing him and knowing mentally how he prepares in the offseason, to know that he doesn't have to learn a new system, that he doesn't have to learn basically an entirely new language. I think that's going to help him out. It's going to help Odell Beckham out. It's going to help the entire offense out, because when they get together this spring, they're not going to be starting at step one. They're going to be ahead of the curve. And I really think that, you know, his accuracy has improved. He's doing some different things this offseason to really help his throwing, and I thought his arm looked better this year than it's ever looked. So I know Eli's excited about you know, having Coach McAdoo there, and I know this is going to be a big year for him. And if he can give Victor Cruz back and now have that 1-2 punch of Cruz and Odell Beckham, you know, we're going to have all kinds of dance moves in the end zone.
One more question, and I'll pass it on to some others to ask. Spags did a great job for the Giants his first go-around, but this year he gave up a defense, didn't do as well as many expected, especially the end of the game. What's your thoughts on Spags and being the defensive coordinator, and any perspective on what we look forward to watching the defense going forward?
I think Spags did a remarkable job, and if you just look at the statistics, you would probably say he should be fired, but when you look at what he was dealing with, the injuries, the lack of talent that he had to deal with at a number of different positions, you go away from, you know, 3 or 4 weeks before training camp, and you think, okay, I've got a stud pass rusher in Jason Pierre-Paul, so I just got to put some pieces around him, try to devise some game plans around that guy, and then you lose him to an awful accident for half the season. So, you know, that kind of puts you behind the eight ball. Then your middle linebacker, John Beeson, is banged up. You know, I don't know that they started the same three linebackers more than twice all season long. So there was a constant fluctuation at the linebacker core. And then they had some issues with the safeties. You know, Craig Dahl, they had to pick him up during the season. So I thought Spags did a pretty good job. And when you look at that defense and how they kept them in a lot of games, you know, the Patriots game comes to mind. For them to be able to hold Tom Brady basically in check all the way down until the very end. You know, I thought that he came up with some very good game plans, and I think that the players really like him. He's a very smart coach, and some of the styles, even, you know, when we won Super Bowl 42 and he left, he went to St. Louis, he was in New Orleans, he was even in Baltimore before he came back to the Giants. He's really done a great job of kind of learning the 3-4 style defenses, and he's kind of adapted some of that. So now his system is not just a 4-3, which is what he basically ran when he came to us from Philly. It was a Jim Johnson-like offense, defense, kind of what you're seeing down in Carolina. He's morphed that now and kind of sprinkled in some other 3-4 type aspects, and I think it's really made him a dangerous coordinator.
And from your perspective, Sean, being a player in the NFL and going through the whole the process of it, it seems like the Giants have more injuries than most NFL teams out there. Do you think it's the training or the coaches that they have that they're not going through the right process? Because it just seems like every year that they're going to the fourth, fifth defensive back out there, and it puts them at a disadvantage. Any thoughts on that?
You know, it's really tough as a former player. You try to look at those things. You know, I think that it's really there's more injuries across the league, and I look at a lot of it is because training camp is not what it used to be. The offseason program is not what it used to be. So now a lot of these kids are trying to play themselves into shape during the preseason games, and they're not getting the reps that they normally would get in training camp. So you're seeing a lot more injuries at the start of the season than you normally do because the players aren't in football shape. I think that for the Giants, they've kind of been snake bit in a couple of different position groups. I can't really say that it's the training aspect of it because even in just the last 2 years, Coach Coughlin's done a great job. I mean, he adapted their training philosophy. He changed the practice schedule around. He gave them a recovery day on Friday and moved some of that to Saturday. So they've tried a lot of different things to try to alleviate some of those injuries, but they're just a part of the game. And for whatever reason, the Giants have been on the bad luck side of it.
Sean, what do you think of – I mean, you're in the media now. You retired from football. You're going to be flying out to San Francisco for the NFL Network. You do a great job. You look sharp every Sunday morning. Melissa Stark and Billick don't help you at all. What do you think of Rob? I mean, doesn't it almost feel like Rob's got a little reporter in him?
I think he's done a pretty good job of pulling out, you know, some of the tough answers. And, you know, I like that he's kind of throwing his own little knowledge into the questions. I don't know if that's, you know, because he feels pretty comfortable or you guys are already three bottles deep in the Cabernet.
A little bit of both. Sean, just in wrapping up, can you, because Super Bowl Sunday is next week, and there's going to be a team that's going to win, and there's going to be a team that's going to lose. and there's going to be some guys that are in it for the first time. Can you just convey with Rob and his buddies here celebrating his 50th birthday what that day was like for you and then the aftermath of actually being a champion, considering the fact that you played at Rutgers, you weren't even drafted, you went to Cleveland, and then you played, you started, and you became a New York Giant, and then 4 years later, you're hoisting the Lombardi Trophy and the anchor of that offensive line.
You know, there's times where I when I hear people talk about my career like that, I have to pinch myself because, you know, when I wasn't supposed to play Division I football, I wasn't supposed to be in the NFL, you know, by the scout standards and all that. And so for me to play in the NFL for 1 year, I thought was a you know, a dream come true. And to be able to play 11 years and to be able to do the things that I was able to do with winning the Super Bowl and being able to experience Pro Bowls, you know, it just seems very surreal. And I'll say that the Super Bowl, from the moment that we beat the Green Bay Packers in that minus 23 wind chill day, all the way, you know, through even March of that same year, it felt like a dream. And I think the Super Bowl, as an NFL player, when you're in the NFL, you're playing, you're hoping you get to the playoffs. But, you know, especially when I was in Cleveland, you always felt like, man, that Super Bowl, like, it's like a fairy tale. You know, it felt like a unicorn. You hear about it, you hear people talk about it, you even see pictures about it, but you've never seen one. You've never actually, you know, been able to prove that it exists. And I'll relay a story. In 2006. I went with my wife down to Miami. The Colts were playing the Bears in the Super Bowl. And it was the first time I'd ever gone to a Super Bowl. I always said I don't want to go to the game until I'm playing in one. And I didn't go to the game. But I was down there that week, and I got to sense how big the Super Bowl is and how special it is. And Eli was down there as well with his wife, and we were hanging out and having dinner one night. And it's like you guys are sitting around right now, and he and I were talking about it, and he said, you know what? He said, we've got to get one of these. This is what it's all about. And we both kind of realized at that moment down there that, man, you know what? Playing in the NFL, it's not about just being there and just being in the league and making money and all those things. It's about winning the ultimate game. And sure enough, having that perspective, the next year, we found ourselves in that exact moment. And it was the coolest part about playing in the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl was seeing the look on my wife's face, on my parents' face. The night before the game, Coach Coughlin talked to the entire team and talked about how significant that game is for everybody's families, for everybody that's going through everything with you, all the wins and losses throughout your career. And in that one moment, you have a chance to change everybody's life forever. It was a very powerful moment, and it's something that I cherish every single day.
Sean, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate the time. Safe travels out to San Francisco.
Happy birthday, Rob.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
I hope you guys rock it out, and I hope it takes you till next Sunday to recover.
Good stuff. Sean, I'll see you out in San Fran. Pretty cool stuff. Sean O'Hara. Getting an opportunity to celebrate Rob Sorge's 50th birthday with him and his friends. But we weren't done at Rob's little surprise for his 50th birthday, because what we decided to do is kind of open things up and let Rob and his friends ask the PapaCast some questions, anything that they wanted to know about the world of sports. And they've got some pretty good questions that they had dialed up. Rob, you get the first question, or the first two questions, before we let the party goers get in. What's on your mind?
50 is a halftime for me, so I'm trying to see what the next half is. Hopefully it's going to be a full half, not a two-minute warning. So my goal is to see at least the Giants win one more, if not two more rings, before I go to a different place.
I think, wow, that was pretty depressing, huh? You're 50. You're not 80. Maybe I'm saying that because I was 50 last year, and I get the whole deal. Did you just say you played? Wow. You play golf like you're 80?
He's never seen me play golf, but I keep accurate scores, unlike what I've heard rumors of other people. But my goal is to be a scratch player before I'm retired.
What's your handicap right now?
By 30-something.
Oh, okay. You're going to need, like, three lives for that. Anyway, do you have a question or a thought? I know you're a big Giants fan. You're really emotionally invested in the team. Give me a question. What do you want to know?
With respect to the Giants?
Or with anything. Anything in sports that you want to know, you fire away.
We have some Met fans here, and I'm a big Yankee fan personally. From a team cap standpoint, is it rigged for now the smaller cap teams to do well in the in baseball? It seems like some of the owners are preventing some of the teams to do as well as they could possibly do.
I think the revenue sharing and that luxury tax is a big factor. But if you're a team like the Yankees where the money just pours out, I don't think it deters teams like that from spending money. And we saw what the Dodgers did as far as how they spend money. If they think they have a chance to win, they look at it as a loss leader. So I don't think it's a bad thing. But the problem that baseball has, as opposed to football and even basketball, where the salary cap is more streamlined, is that the owners in baseball that don't spend, the low cap teams, they actually make a big profit by collecting the luxury tax and having a garbage payroll. Whereas in the NFL, you have to spend an X amount of cash. Despite you could have a low cap number, but in the NFL, there's still a certain amount of cash that has to be spent. So you've got to spend what you're getting as far as your revenue share, where in baseball, too many teams have pocketed a lot of money for a long time and just put a bad product out there.
Do you see, as far as sports go and a general focus, NFL's been obviously the number one sport other than NASCAR. Where do you see the sports world going from fans being into it and the growth side?
The hardest part that all the sports have right now is getting teams in the building, because between digital media, your phone, your iPad, your computer, your smart TV, the high definition that you get on your television, why would you go to a game? And that's a big problem. And then it looks bad on TV, and then you lose some of the excitement factor if the stadium's empty. So all the pro teams are right now at a real crossroads of how to make the in-stadium experience enjoyable to make sure people are in the building, which then will augment the home experience. But teams are really challenged right now in pro sports to get people in the building because it's very easy at home to watch it in a lot of different ways.
The Yankees, other than opening day and playoffs, around the infield is a lot of empty seats, to your point. Where do you see it going? Where's your vantage point, or where do you see that sport progressing?
It's amazing that they could charge those dollars for 81 home games. Here's the thing. It doesn't look good on TV, but all those seats are sold. So the Yankees are laughing all the way to the bank because those seats, although it's empty and it looks bad, the seats are sold, and they're making the money, and a lot of the people that would be sitting in those seats are in the beautiful club and everything else, but those are all season tickets, so aesthetically it looks bad, but the only way it's going to change is if they stop selling them and people stop buying them. But as long as people buy them, it's not going to be an issue.
And Bob, as a fan of sports in general, you're in a unique position and envy of a lot of sports fan out there. What do you see that many of us don't see from sports in general? Anything that kind of raises your eyebrows on in general in sports?
I think the one thing I'd like to share with people that are listening is that there's a human element to this. I think what's happened is people have become so fantasy sports centric, so number centric, so stat centric that they don't understand that these are people. For instance, in the NFL, you always hear about the guys that get arrested, that get in trouble. But that's a very small percentage of a league that 53 guys on a team, plus the guys that are on injured reserve in the practice squad, you're talking about 80 times 32. So you're going to get a handful. But the amount of work that guys do in the community and the amount of giving that they give, it's really tremendous. And when you witness it and you're around it on a daily basis, and you see every Tuesday, which is the players' day off, and the amount of players that are going out doing charitable work and not with cameras there, doing it on their own, and guys calling up the head of community relations for the Giants, Allison Stangaby, and saying, hey, I got some free time, I want to do something. Don't want to make it public, but they want to give back. And I think that story kind of gets lost when you have these guys that just go off the rails. So I hope that answered your question.
That's great. That's great.
All right, let's go. We have some other people. We got to start with a lady. All right, so name where you're from. What's your question?
Hi, my name is Donna Adams, and I'm from Washington, New Jersey. And my question is, as a young widow of three children, why is it so completely, utterly impossible for me to bring my children to a Yankees game or a Giants game? It's the all-American game, and I can't afford to bring them.
Wow. You know, I don't have an answer for that. And that's the problem with sports today and the problem with going to game. It's so expensive. It's really expensive. Although I will say this, for baseball, here's your best opportunity, is the secondary market. And you still, no luck.
Kids want to see a Yankees game. Come on. I mean, we can't afford to see a Yankees game. That's ridiculous.
All right, but have you gone the secondary market like StubHub and all that stuff for lesser games? Right. It's not going to be the Red Sox, but it might be Houston or it might be Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Have you tried that?
Yes. In fact, I'll be honest with you. I have a friend who has a business in Baltimore, and we have been able to go see a Yankees-Baltimore game cheaper than staying in New York with hotel.
So taking the train down to Baltimore or whatever, driving?
Driving to Baltimore, staying in a hotel. We can see the Yankees. And honestly, when you walk around the streets of Baltimore, you see Yankees fans because they drive there because it's cheaper to see a game there.
We got to find a way to make this happen. PapaCast is going to make it happen for you.
Thank you.
Question.
I'm Carl Fishbach. I'm Rob's neighbor here in Mendham. And question is, I have a question and a prediction. First is a question. What is the health of the Champions Tour? What makes it unique in terms of providing a competitive environment for people in Rob's demographic to continue to enjoy their sport and a certain social standard, competition, and how are the fans reacting to that Champions Tour?
All right, first of all, part of the new marketing, it's now called the PGA Tour Champions, no longer the Champions Tour, which just got started in Hualalai. What makes it viable? What makes it viable is this is an opportunity for people to walk with legends. Corporate hospitality, because they really don't charge tickets to go to the event. This is more about corporate hospitality, marketing pro-ams, getting your brand associated with these players, and they can play. I mean, you got guys shooting 22 under. You got Miguel Angel Jimenez, who is going to represent, at 52 years of age, he's going to represent Spain in the Olympics. He and Sergio Garcia are going to be in the athlete's dorm in the Olympic Village. And he might make the Ryder Cup team. Vijay Singh from Fiji. I think what the PGA Tour Champions does is it creates a bridge. It gives players an opportunity to continue to grow the brand of the PGA Tour. You got Davis Love III, who won at Wyndham last summer on the regular tour, yet he's competing out on the PGA Tour Champions. You got Fred Couples. And I think the great value is, and when you go to a PGA Tour event, and this is not a knock on the PGA Tour guys, but they're so focused on making it, becoming somebody, kind of earning their stripes, trying to win that week. Whereas on the PGA Tour Champions, it's much more engaging during the Pro-Am. You're not going to get blown off. You're going to get these tremendous stories, and you're going to learn about the history of the sport. So I think it's a perfect place for nostalgia. I think it's a perfect place to watch guys who are great players still play great. I mean, look at 2 years ago at Augusta at the Masters. Seven players who played on the PGA Tour Champions made the cut at Augusta in the 2014 Masters. And of those seven, five of them were in the top 20. Miguel Angel Jimenez finished third. Langer finished in the top 10. Couples, Singh, and Marco Mira all finished in the top 20. So I think that proves that those guys can play.
Yeah. So who's creating the most buzz right now in the Champions Tour in terms of the rookie class?
John Daly. John Daly is coming out at the Insperity Invitational, which you'll see on Golf Channel in May. And, because he's the everyman. He's the guy that everybody can relate to. He's got a homemade swing that crosses parallel. He's smoking. He's you know, playing country music. He's got, you know, the weird clothes and the whole deal. But people, that's what most people look like when they're playing golf. We're spoiled where we live, you know, Northeast, storied country clubs, whether it's the New York metropolitan area, Boston, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, D.C. We're spoiled. But most of America plays golf at semi-private public golf courses, and John Daly speaks to all those people. So we can't wait for him to come out. All right.
We do have a hidden gem in Mendham who resembles John Daly both in his personal life and his aspirations. It's Rob Sorge. My prediction as his neighbor is that this year he's going to shoot his age. Nine holes, I think he's going to break 50, and I think we're going to help him. Our mission in this neighborhood is to help him get there.
As you looked at this podcast, when you clicked on it and you downloaded it, you saw a picture of Rob. He looks nothing like John Daly, but it was a good dig. All right. Yeah, I know you have a question.
Yes, I'm another neighbor of Rob's, but you just mentioned, Bob, the storied country clubs. And I see the PGA Tour with these new balls just blowing away those courses. And what's going to happen to the Baltusrols where they're having the PGA Championship this year and other courses like that with the new balls? Is there any way they can make these courses still relevant?
I think they can. And I think Baltusrol proved that, not because I'm a member there, but, you know, we got dropped from the U.S. Open rotation. The last few times the U.S. Open was there, the scoring record was set. Nicklaus set the new U.S. Open scoring record. That stood until Lee Jansen broke it in 93. So it was deemed that the golf course might have become a little bit obsolete, that the players could overpower it. In steps the PGA of America, who brings the fairways in, adds Kentucky bluegrass, lengthens the golf course a bit. What was the winning score when Phil Mickelson won? Not a usual four under. Not the usual, what you see at a lot of PGAs is 12 under, 13 under. Valhalla, they get to 16, 17 under. 4 under 1, and I think there were only 6 players that were actually under par. So you can set a golf course up to negate some of that. You can add length. You can bring the fairways in. You can bring a coarser kind of rough in like Kentucky bluegrass. And you could speed the greens up. We had really dry conditions, and the greens played fast. The fairways played fast, which then kicks the ball into that thick rough. So you can protect golf courses if the golf courses are classics, as Baltusrol, Wingfoot, Ridgewood have proven over the test of time.
Now, Phil's had a nice beginning of the year. He seems to have his driver going straight. Do you have any predictions on him this year in the PGA Tour? And also at Baltusrol, where he won before.
Well, I know Phil has played in the last 2 years. I know Phil's played a lot of practice rounds there. You know, he gets an opportunity to jump in there and play a little bit. I think it's certain courses for certain horses. And it was funny because I was talking with Tiger Woods before the final round of the Masters last year, and we were just in the parking lot talking. And he had just come down from the Champions locker room. He just finished having lunch with Phil, and they were going out. And they weren't in that last group or second to last. They were going out a little bit earlier than they would have liked. And Tiger said the story. And he said, he goes, I just finished saying this to Phil inside. No matter how old we are, no matter where our games are at, I got a feeling that for a long time, every time we show up here, we're going to be in contention somewhat. And there is something to be said about that golf course. If you look at Fred Couples, every year he's in contention. There's a certain know-how. So I think Phil Mickelson will still contend at a Masters. I think at an Open Championship, he's got an opportunity because you can spray it a little bit. I think his U.S. Open window came and went at Marion. That was his chance to complete that whole thing. But, yeah, I think he can still compete, and on the right week he can still win. All right, you get the last question.
Last question, Bob. You have a very unique perspective in a lot of different areas. For the next 12 months, please predict NFL champion, NHL champion, Major League Baseball champion, and the hockey champion.
What am I? Johnny Carson, the Karnak?
NHL, dude.
All right, here.
Division 1 champion for football.
Kentucky
32.
Here's what I'm going to give you. I'll give you the Super Bowl. I think the Carolina Panthers are going to win because, no, not a blowout. I know they've been blowing people out, but you get this You get this feeling about Manning and all this other stuff, and you're right. They do not play well with leads. So I think this will be a close game. I think Carolina wins because I think there's going to be a couple plays that Cam Newton uses his legs and runs and makes back-breaking kind of first downs. And I think Manning, who did not make any mistakes against the Patriots, I think Carolina's defense is a lot better. They'll force him into a mistake or two. Close game, but I think Carolina wins it in a tight one. Yeah, maybe like by 4 or 5 points, but a game that's close. How do you pick against Golden State in the NBA? It's hard. I mean, you'd like to see Tim Duncan win one more, though. So that'd be pretty cool. And then baseball, I'm a Yankee fan, so I'm going to just say Yankees. How's that? Yankees?
Yankees? What team would you rather have, the Yankees or the Mets? Which roster?
Oh, the Mets. As a Yankee fan, who... Even as a Yankee fan, who would you rather have? Teixeira? A-Rod? No, you want a pitching staff. And that's when the Yankees were dominant in the 90s and into the early 2000s, it was because of their pitching. They didn't have this kind of staff, but pitching is the key. And Joe Torre always said it. If you got a pitching staff, you're going to win. All right, boys, thank you. Thanks. Rob, happy birthday, man.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob.
Shaking my hand like it's on TV. Yeah, yeah. And that wraps it up for this edition, a special edition of the Papa Cast, Party Style.